Welcome to the Elevated Podcast, based on the best-selling books Elevated and Excavated. I am your co-host and co-author, Virgil Herring. Joining me, as always, great friend, co-host, and co-author, Drew Maddox. Drew, how are we doing today?
Doing so great, Virgil. I hope you're having a good week.
Man, it's been a great week. It's going to be interesting. This is going to be a big one. Harness. Harness is a, once again, you can call it the instrument that, you know, maybe horses have.
Right.
You know, the things that keep things together.
Yeah.
And then harness the energy of a situation is corralling all of that that's combusting inside of you and somehow controlling it to provide you with the greatest energy you can ever play with. And to me, when I think of harness, I think of what adrenaline and the moment can do for you that you can't replicate in any practice, anywhere except in the game of life, work, sport, and how you learn to handle the energy that comes out of your, from like out of your being, of the nervousness of the moment, the anxiety slash excitement. That's a really important, I'm going to use those a little bit later.
Yeah.
Anxiety and excitement are the same thing. It's just how you channel the energy. How you use those things, because those are the things that throw you into the zone or flow state, and those are the things that ultimately provide you with the greatest performances of your life, whether you are the person doing it, the person coaching it, or the person watching it.
Yeah.
You see that when people harness the extra energy that comes out of the body with adrenaline and the energy that comes from anxiety, excitement.
That's good. Well, first of all, last week was amazing. Let's just state that. The word guilt was amazing. And what you to tip it off right here around harness, I was sitting there thinking as you were talking, you know, harness to me is an action word. And what I mean by that is it's the outward expression of the vertical inward reality of all I was created to be.
Ooh, yeah.
So I was thinking about harness as you were talking. I was just trying to play some wordplay in my head. And I was starting to think about, like, harness really is the convergence of multiple factors that each of us have been blessed and gifted with. One would be talent. Mm-hmm. We've all been blessed with enormous and special and unique and gifted talent, something that you're really good at. Two, we all have a passion to perform, to do stuff that matters, that things that make you come alive. So you take that talent coupled with passion, and this is where harness comes in. So at the overlay of those two, now harness is really the forward arrow, if you would, that throws it into mission. And mission is defined as results that matter to you and the impact it can make on the word. So harness is really taking what you are vertically designed and created to do, and it's the outward release in a horizontal way to make an impact and to directly tie it to results that you care deeply for, which would be your personal mission.
Yeah.
But that's harnessing that power as it relates to your talent and your passion and the impact and the mission that can have on the world.
Yeah, because the passion is the highest fuel of emotional energy.
There you go.
That we have. And I saw something great. I posted it on my daily positive
on
Instagram from Mark Manson. He says, everybody's been given a gift in life. It's your job to use it because God gave you that gift to bless the earth.
Yeah.
If you aren't using what you're passionate about on a daily basis, you are not using what God gave you.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to encourage people to remember everything that you feel passionate about, everything that you love, whether it's music, computer science, weather, for anything, whatever you find that you're passionate about, that should be your mission.
Yeah.
And the more things that you can do around your passion, that turns work into a level of paid play.
Yeah.
And that would be something that I would encourage everybody to experience.
Yeah.
Is to, if you can figure out a way to employ your passion, who knows where you can go?
Yeah.
Who knows where you can go?
Yeah, one of the things I love to do is really pick the brain. And I know you've interviewed several of these. Being in Nashville, Tennessee, we get the fortunate opportunity. We have lots of friends in the community that are songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about the word harness and what they're able to do to take those passions, to take their incredible gift sets, and how they harness all of that and release that to make this beautiful impact on the world through the gift of music.
Yeah.
And I love to talk to, like, I know you've had Beth Laird on your podcast, mm-hmm. her husband, Luke,
yeah.
who's a brilliant songwriter.
100%.
And they have a whole entity set up to really harness the giftings of all these songwriters.
Yeah.
And they pull all of those talents together. So the individual harnessing of that and then the collective grouping of it and what they're able to do through Creative Nation, their group. But then, like, somebody like Ashley Gourley, and, you know, who's the GOAT.
I mean, yeah,
he broke Paul McCartney's record. He's has more number ones
than anybody
than
ever.
Anybody that has walked the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime I'm around him, I know he probably gets sick of it. He's a good friend of mine. I've coached his kids mm-hmm. for years, and our kids have gone to school and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff together. So I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, but I know he probably gets tired of me asking questions. Hey, where were you? What were you thinking? What sparked that? What did you hear? What did you think? How did you even get that started? Where'd that melody come from? Because I truly want to know, basically what I'm asking is, how did you harness your talent, your passion, contextually where you were in the world at that time, just what was going on in your life, maybe some experience, maybe something had happened. How do you pull all of that together and then harness it in a direction
yeah.
that makes this beautiful, beautiful experience of music that people are going to remember the rest of their life? They're going to remember when they heard that song,
yep.
where they were, what was going on. It will shape millions of people. And it all started with you harnessing context, passion, mission, purpose, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stepping in by harnessing that to do what you were created to do, which was make music.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to draw two parallels off of that. I was very fortunate to interview Ashley Gourley the day that he passed Paul McCartney.
Oh, is that right?
On the Verge, yeah.
I did my
on the.
Gosh.
So Beth called me.
That's amazing.
Called me and said, "Hey, you know, when he gets there, you're going to be talking to the person. He probably knows that he's going to be number one today.
Wow.
And pass Paul McCartney." I mean, he's as unassuming as he can possibly be, too, really.
So humble.
Oh, my
like,
goodness.
It's truly amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
He's a remarkable human being.
Yeah. The thing that I find that I want to use here is the fact that it's a lot easier to stay in the process when the outcome is art because there's no result.
That's right? A great point.
You know?
That's a great point.
It's so easy to fall in love with the process when there's no end result. You just get the art that it was. Most of the time, these songwriters, and I've interviewed plenty of them on my podcast, is that they're not writing songs to write number one hits. They're writing songs to share an experience mm-hmm. for people to ride along with because they can feel like they've been there too. And if just enough people feel like they've been in the same situation, it's a hit. But they don't go about it thinking that it's a hit.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs, his passion was technology that was transformative. He created a computer that was more efficient and better than anybody else. And then he wanted to figure out, he single-handedly changed music and how it's delivered.
Yeah.
And it was his passion. And he didn't have the result in mind. He didn't really care. He just wanted all of his music to fit on this little thing called an iPod so that he could listen to whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and didn't have to wait for the radio to play a song. And it fit in his pocket, and thousands of songs had fit in this little thing, right? So he followed a process that he wanted. He employed the people to make it happen, and he let it go. So at the beginning, Apple Music, it was art. he talks about it. Well, the book that was written on Jobs, which he was at the end of, that was close to the end of his life and came out after he passed away. It talked about how Apple was art.
Not science, which is a technology company.
But once it reached a certain level of success and Jobs had passed, the people who have picked up the pieces of Apple and carrying it forward, I'm not saying that art isn't at stake here.
Yeah.
But it is very apparent that what matters to Apple is the bottom line.
Yeah.
And I think that now every iPhone that comes out, every MacBook that comes out, the only thing that they're measuring is the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And when Steve Jobs started, it was about the experience of touching the MacBook. Mm-hmm. What was that? Did you just feel like that was a different computer ever? Did I make it easier for you to navigate? Does it feel better than this big clunky machine? And like the art of life, the art of living is lost more times than not because we live in a culture where results are the king.
Yeah.
And, but it never ceases to amaze me. The greatest singers, the greatest athletes, the greatest actors, when they go up to accept their award, they almost always say, if they overcame result-driven life, which many of them have, is when they succumb to just falling in love with what they do best.
Yeah.
And let the outcome speak for itself. If they prepare correctly, they couldn't have done anything differently.
Yeah.
And if it worked out that today their preparation and their effort and their passion and their strengths showed up and won, great. But if they prepared to the best of their ability, laid it all on the floor, so to speak, and it wasn't enough, they didn't lose. They ran out of time.
Yeah.
And it's get back up on your feet, and tomorrow's a new day, and we're going to attack it the same way.
Yeah.
But more times than not, if we lose, we almost across the board, we scrap the whole deal.
Yeah.
College football, if you're not in the national championship hunt through game seven, you fire the coach.
Yeah.
You have to let everybody know, doggone it, we care, and this is not acceptable here. Except when you think about it, you're like, wait a second. There's going to be a winner and a loser of every game of football or basketball. If you think that if you did your best and everybody's like, we laid it all out there and you didn't win, that you're a huge failure, that's a cultural malady that needs to be addressed because that is no good. Mm. But man, we are in the throes of it every day.
Yeah.
I mean, I just look at these college coaches in the big sports and the pressure cooker that they're under. They can't even begin the process of building, like we talked about last week, a love foundation coaching situation where you can see that you're building a program, because generally speaking, the money that funds the program cares only about trophies.
Yep.
And the ego of stroking, it was my check that helped get so and so or something yep. done. And we ended up winning. And it's getting lost. What is getting lost is the process that should be employed to be great and how to fall in love with your passion with no judgment. Whew, that's hard.
Yeah.
Judgment is a mother, bro.
Yeah.
Judgment is a mother.
Wow. I was thinking about the word harness, too, as it related specifically. You and I, and I mean this with all humility, no arrogance at all, but I would imagine in the world of basketball teaching shot making, in the world of golf teaching shot making, we would be as good as you could ask somebody to, from an elementary level to an expert level and all points in between, be able to help people in their development of being better shot makers. Is that accurate to say?
I would certainly. Well, okay. I feel like I prepare myself to be that guy.
Yeah.
And I know that you do as well. Yeah.
So obviously, you know, the word harness, I was sitting here just thinking as we were to take it another direction, just as to position this in people's mind and make an application. You know, you want to harness all that you have to offer as the white ball is standing in front of you and harness everything that you possibly can to, you know, hit the ball straighter, longer, whatever it may be. What would you, from a technical standpoint, so I know there's a psychological element and a mindset. I get all of that. And I know there's repetition and all those things. But if you were going to break down the intricacies of great golf shot making and the ability to harness that as it relates to striking the ball more pure, more clean, what would that look like? How would you start to go through a process of explaining or articulating that?
Okay, well, that's a great point. So the number one fundamental in life, in anything, is speed. If it's business, is you can get the job done faster than somebody else. You can build the product faster than somebody else. If you're a football player, you can run faster than everybody else. If you're a great basketball player, you're either able to drive the lane faster than anybody or get a shot off faster, Steph Curry, get the shot off faster than anybody else, right? So speed. So how do you get speed? You have to understand that generally speaking, the golf swing travels in a circle that revolves around the spine. So understanding physics, the spine has to stay relatively still to create a tight traveling circle. If there's too much side-to-side motion, there becomes an ellipse. There's flat spots. Flat spots in the circle are slack. Slack is a loss of rotary speed.
Wow.
Right? So my job is to first find out how well you can rotate, which equals how well can you load up and unload your motion. What are your physical limitations to that, if there are any? And now we got your circle, the swing plane, what most people call the swing plane. It's just basically the circle that you create while trying to go really fast.
Yeah.
My job is to bend that circle toward the target. And then you're hitting the ball solid, and you're hitting it in the direction that you're wanting it to go, roughly. And now you're going to see some idiosyncrasies. My tendency, when that happens, makes the ball curve a little to the left.
Yeah.
Or a little to the right. What nuances need to be adjusted within my hands to deliver the club face squarer to the circle that I'm swinging on? Because ultimately, my job is to make the ball fly straight. And then, if it's flying straight right, straight, or straight left, bend the circle to straight. That's it.
Wow.
So it's speed.
Yep.
Solidness of contact.
Love that.
Bend it
okay.
to straight. And then the ball position, where it's placed in your stance, because the golf swing travels on an arc.
Yep.
On a curve, the more the ball moves back, the more the swing will travel inside to out when it hits the ball, and the more the ball moves forward, the more the path will head it outside to in. So if you're needing to play a fade, you move the ball forward in the arc, you don't change your golf swing, and now your swing moves slightly more to the left with the face still square, and now the ball fades.
Wow.
I can move the ball back in my stance, my swing travels more to the right, the face stays square, now the ball draws. So the art of shot making stems from, one, a great, tight, fast circle that produces a predictable result. Most of the time, somebody is moving the ball naturally, easily, from right to left or left to right. All right? Once you know who you are, you have to be able to be the other side of that when you need to. And that might only be two or three times a day where you got to hit the opposite shot, whether it's around the tree or, you know, over water or whatever. There's very few times that you have to be able to move it the other way. But when you do, you don't change your swing. You change where the ball is placed within the circle. It's a geometric and physics explanation.
Wow.
You're not trying to manipulate the motion. You're moving the ball within the circle to create the desired ball flight.
Yeah.
So it starts from the fundamentals of the motion. Get it as fast as you can get it. What does that tendency make you do? Bend it towards zero, which is on plane. And then whoever you are, use the ball position to manipulate the curve. And that is shot making 101 golf.
Yeah. So the reason why I asked was, which is, it's just brilliance. First of all, I love hearing you talk about it. I love hearing people that are a master of their domain and have understanding at an expert level like that and can articulate it in a way that makes sense to somebody that's just coming into the room as well.
Yeah.
And you can
Thank
do
you.
That. You have that gift of that. The reason why I was asking or wanting you to explain that was, you know, because all of that's in play. And that don't even start to count into it, the hours of preparation, practice, you know, the psychological elements of it. You're mm-hmm. you're just so all that I wanted to set up was, it's not just you standing above a white ball and just striking the ball and then you hope it goes straight. Mm-hmm. There's a harnessing effect of so many factors, mental, physical, emotional, psychological, all of those things. So back to Apple, you know, back to talking about us and the way that we're created with passion and talent, songwriting, all the examples we've already used, all the way to there. I think that's what I want people to understand is when it gets to the moment in time where it's time to deliver, the precursor to delivery is the harnessing of all that you have to offer. So it still comes back to, and you and I talk about this all the time, it comes back to the process. Mm-hmm. It's being focused on the process. And so many times we get ahead of the harnessing and we focus on the outcome.
Yeah.
And the end result. And you and I have been saying this, and even before I started hearing Nick Saban say this, we've been talking about trusting the process. And in order to harness all that you have to offer, a moment in time, a company, organization, something you need to execute on, it really does start with your individual process and making sure that's in alignment with your talent, your passion, your purpose. And then the process to be able to walk that out, and then the ability to compound all of that with force into the way you harness that into execution and completion.
Yeah, and I think that it goes in an order, right? So to experience harnessing, you have to have a level of passion and ability, whatever we're talking about, sport, business, art, what have you. And you have to put it to the test. So that means the song goes on the radio. That means we go play a hard golf course. We play a basketball team that's supposed to be way better than we are. You know, and you go out and you give it all you have on the physical element.
Yep.
Now we see, when we got hit with all that adrenaline, all that passion, all of the emotion of our whole life has been for this moment. And what did it do to our body? It really messes with your stomach. Things start racing in your head. Now you have to figure out how do you mentally prepare? That's a big way to say that. How do you prepare for the emotions of achieving your dreams? You hardly ever have your very first attempt at something is the only opportunity that you get. More times than not, there's a lot of practicing that goes into a lot of game time, a lot of business time effort that goes into something until it's the ultimate moment for you. It all starts with your physical gifts.
Yep.
And then you have to figure out how to mentally harness your physical gifts that combat against the emotional ingredients, fear of failure, desire to succeed, pressure, expectations, expectations of myself, other people's expectations, the moment. There might be some environmental elements like wind, rain, heat, cold. How do you have the mental toughness to be able to block out the interference that is trying to get in the way of whatever it is that you've spent your entire X amount of days, months, years preparing for this moment? And that's like to me where Goggins and Jocko Willink stand out because their tests are the most dire.
Right.
And their lessons from war, you have to pare them down knowing full well that this, like a golf match, a basketball game, your day at Apple, you know, your job at whatever you're doing is not life and death.
Right.
But the fundamental of the moment for war is the true ultimate test of life, so to speak. It's life or death. What stands out? And the emotional control of handling all the nerves, all of that that you feel right below your rib cage in your gut when you feel like you could throw up. And we've all been there.
Yes.
You've all been there probably. I probably felt that nervous wedding day. I felt that nervous competing in every sport that I've ever played.
Kid being born.
Like anything that is a once in a lifetime scenario, right? You get that pit in your stomach.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that's when all of your talent has already been on display, and now it is the test in front of, for lack of a better term, now it's the test in front of God.
Yeah.
And judgment plays a huge role in the view, and you have to figure out the mental process that allows your physical processes to come out as fluidly perfect as you can make them. Yeah. And at the end of the day, the true greats have a level of ability to harness that better than the next level and the level before that and the level before that and the level before that. And that's why we stand in awe of Michael Jordan, Kobe, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, Nadal, you know, Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, it's just unbelievable. Every time the chips are down, it seems like they're in it. What are they doing? That's maybe it's their gift.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they have figured out how to harness the physical talent that is supercharged with emotion.
Yeah.
And man, I wish that I had a better way of explaining it than that. But at the end of the day, we're all faced with different levels of talent around that particular scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. And, you know, one of the things as a coach, and I'll even go as a dad of five, you know, raising five children with my wife, and then as a coach of young people, the thing that, you know, is the great challenge in working with all of them is their unwillingness to harness all that they have to offer because fear holds them back. Mm-hmm. And so when fear holds them back, they don't offer all that they have to offer or make a investment or a contribution because they're standing on the sideline and afraid to take that risk. Because if I do harness all that I have and it doesn't go the way that I want it to go and I'm deemed a failure or a mistake, what will other people think?
Mm-hmm.
I won't be as good as what others may have thought. I may have been found out. You know, I may lose relationships as a result or whatever it is. So then they just don't try.
That's
and
right.
They don't harness all of those things that you said that you have to combat and really kind of embrace, really.
That's right.
And step into the arena. But fear is such a big, big part of this in the refusal to harness all that you have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't step forward. The risk isn't taken. And then regret starts to emerge in our kids' lives.
Yeah, I would be thinking, I'd like to hear your take on this. Is like, to me, the interference of harnessing are judgment and expectation. Mm. Almost all fears are based around judgment and
so
expectation.
True. Wow.
And sometimes it's judgment that takes the lead, and sometimes it's expectation that takes the lead. Role of the that has the reins of fear, right? What is it that you have found to be helpful? Because I know that you are a great player and a great coach, but they all like those two things are dichotomies almost. They're almost different. What have you learned about expectations and judgment, and how it's affected you as a player and as a coach?
I mean, it's really emerged probably the last decade of my life, honestly, with holistic healing. Really inviting specialists into the conversation with myself and just saying enough's enough. I'm tired of living in a way that is totally predicated on getting the desired outcome that I want. And, you know, Virgil, what I found out as I kind of processed through that, it wasn't really like, you know, production or even, you know, producing or performing or being perfect. It was if I didn't live up to the expectation, then I was going to be left alone. And I began to process through all of that. And I started to revisit elements of my story where that started to emerge, situations or moments where that started to emerge, or seasons when it emerged. And then when I started to kind of process through that, to tell those stories, to visit those stories. Mm-hmm. So when they did encounter my story in present day, I was more able to handle the triggers that were happening. And so then it just became this releasing effect of it. So the last 10 years, I've really stepped forward in my process of that. And that related to being a great coach for other kids. So I could help them release, you know, the fear if they didn't live up to the mm-hmm. performance level or the standard or the expectation.
Yeah.
But it took inviting people that I knew cared deeply for me to invite them into my journey and say, enough's enough. I'm tired of living, chasing this ideal version of Drew. I'm tired of listening to the whispers of the shadow side of Drew. Yeah. I want to be true Drew, who Drew was created to be. Mm-hmm. Can you help me get there? And what are those steps that I need to begin to take? And I'll take them as long as it's going to take.
Yeah.
Whatever's required, whatever we got to talk about, whatever we got to visit, whatever story we need to talk about, mm-hmm. ask away and help me process through that mm-hmm. so I can begin to unwind that, so I can step in true holistic living with freedom mm-hmm. of truly who I was created to be.
Without having to divulge, like, the whole story, answer me this question. In that process that you went in the last 10 years, and you found that one thing that prevented you from being true Drew, how much of the story was true, and how much of the story was cultivated in your mind through fear that wasn't real, but it was real to you until you did the work to move past it?
Absolutely. I would say it resided in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, the assumptions mm-hmm. or the thoughts, you know, because, and here we just happen to be in my office today yeah. taping this, but Virgil, you can see those are year long journals full. I mean, you wow. can tell our listeners, like,
that's amazing.
That's full of pages of stories of my life.
Wow.
Right there. Of this process that we're discussing right here. Yep, and those are just two journals yep. of. Yeah. 10. I did one a year.
Wow, and they're 200-page journals.
Yeah, that's, I mean, so sweet. I'm sitting there flipping through it, but I wanted you to see. So
yeah.
I would say, and what I'm finding out in all of this, in my studies, is going back to the beginning of mankind, we are born and develop a negativity bias. And it was birthed from a good place in that it was, you know, early on in the history of mankind, it was survival of the fittest. And so you had to think through protection and defenses to survive. Mm-hmm. So you assume the worst. So over time, man developed and women developed the human condition of negativity bias. So you assume the worst. Mm-hmm. So if that is you, letters listening to me right now, congratulations, you're human. I mean, we're all, and so...
Yep.
The thought was, now how do you start to combat that? How do you start to deal with that? Well, the only way you can start to deal with negativity bias is you really got to start to emerge and allow gratitude. It really starts with gratitude to me. That became the foundation. So then I started doing gratitude visits, gratitude inventory, gratitude visits. And I would start thinking through all of those things, because then I started to study the science. Not only is dopamine and serotonin the feel-good chemicals that reside in our brains that fire off, as you develop and emerge and allow gratitude to emerge more, your neural pathways start to strengthen. Mm-hmm. Well, what's a neural pathway? Neural pathway is the traveling of the feel-good drugs throughout your body, from your brain to your heart, all the way through to your toes. So you combat negativity bias through the visiting of gratitude or positivity in your life. Well, that starts with the way you think it, the way you say it, the way you live it. I mean, and so I just started to think about all of those things. So I would go back and think about those stories that triggered, you know, negativity in my life, moments that were wounding or scarring or hurtful, painful,
yep.
process through that, really get to the bottom of what was truly the reason why I was feeling those things, mm-hmm. started to visit that, and then I started to develop this life of gratitude, and it just started to kind of help me cope with the negativity thoughts that would arise in my mind, and then how do you live out of that an expression of gratitude towards the way you view life?
Mm-hmm. I would be on my final piece on this. I would ask the people that just heard that. You just can't get over the simplicity of things sometimes. So if this was 10 years ago, Drew, that means that probably age 37, 36-ish,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
You got tired of being that Drew.
That's right.
And you became in search of the true Drew.
Yep.
Is that if somebody at age 29 would have told you, it starts with gratitude, you yeah. would have been like,
yeah, yeah, right.
whatever. You know, when I see somebody that comes in to see me for golf that's a very talented golfer that can't perform under in tournament play, I'm like, today we're going to work on breathing.
Yeah.
I did not drive 3 hours to have you talk to me about how I breathe.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the racing mind that won't allow you to concentrate on what it is that you're doing,
yeah.
if you're having that problem, can be completely rearranged through your breathing.
Yep.
Everything that prevents you from being your true self, mm-hmm. the anxiety of judgment and expectations of yourself from others and yourself, can be eradicated through being truly grateful for what you have at this present moment
yeah.
and being here now. You know, be where your feet are, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah.
No matter if you're out there, no matter how complicated and how difficult and how challenging your life may seem to be at this particular moment, usually, like almost always, but I'm never going to say always, almost always, it starts with something very simple.
Yeah.
A simple ingredient to the pie can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And I would ask you all to re-listen to what Drew just said, because many of life's difficulties arise from expectation and judgment. And ultimately, when you move past expectation and judgment, it is largely because you have become grateful or have expressed gratitude for all the gifts that you do have.
Yes.
And man, that just sounds so simple. But at the end of the day, almost always our difficulties arise through complexities that are unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. My closing thought would be this. I mean, as it relates to harness, we are called to live life with the answering or the statement, what if? And I don't want you to live life thinking if only. Like, harness all that you have. You were divinely created for a unique purpose. And I'm not discounting however hard or whatever your struggle may be at this exact moment. But if you woke up today, that's something to be thankful for.
Yep.
And you can start right there. And then just start stacking on top of it gratitude moments throughout the day and watch how your life starts to change and your ability to deal with the negative thoughts, the negative emotions, the negative situations that come into your life.
100%. I have these three words that rhyme that I always put on my Christmas cards when I send to people. If you have your health, you have more wealth than you know. And with that comes the stealth
Ooh.
Required to make your life of your dreams.
Oh, I love that.
Health, wealth, and stealth. And I would just ask you to apply those into whatever it is that you need to make your life what it is that you need. If you're interested in getting our Excavated and Elevated books, you can find them on Amazon. We look forward to seeing you next week as we thank you again for joining us on this journey as we try to elevate ourselves and others around us. Have a wonderful day.